This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In his novel Breakpoint, Richard Clarke imagines a world where cyber criminals hack into the software for communication satellites and send them careening off into space and blow up fiber optic cables, shutting down most of the nation's internet traffic. Clarke says the story is fiction, but not so far-fetched. When Clarke was at the White House as National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism, it was his job in part to imagine threats to national security. One of the things Clarke has focused on since leaving the government in 2003 is the vulnerability of the nation's critical computer networks to cybercriminals, terrorists, and even foreign powers. It's one of the topics addressed in his new book, Your Government Failed You, Breaking the Cycle of National Security Disasters. Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies spoke to Richard Clarke.
Well, Richard Clarke, welcome back to Fresh Air. You know, you've written about how many critical computer networks in both the government and private industry and in utilities that serve, you know, millions of people are vulnerable to attack and tampering. And when you were in the White House, you know, in the 90s, late 90s, of course, you had to deal with some of these issues. And I thought I would ask you to describe one of these episodes that showed how vulnerable even highly sensitive computer networks in the government can be. There was an security exercise that you engineered called Eligible Receiver, I think, in 1997. Well, describe that, if you will.
Well, 1997 is really sort of still early days of the information technology revolutions, early days of cyberspace. But already most of the government, most of the Pentagon had been wired and was depending on the internet and on cyberspace for command and control of our weapon systems, as well as for everything else. And we wanted to begin then to test and see if it was possible to hack into any of these systems. And so with the permission of the Secretary of Defense and review from a great number of lawyers, we put together a team largely consisting of hackers from the National Security Agency. And with no one else in the Pentagon, aside from one or two people at the top, knowing about it, they began on a Sunday, I believe, to try to hack their way into some network somewhere in the Pentagon. And we were going to do this for a week and then report back on how well we did. And within, I think, 24 or 48 hours, not only had they hacked their way into some network, they had hacked their way into all networks they could find in the Pentagon, including the command and control network. And so we stopped it right then and there. We didn't run it for the week. And we reported out to the Deputy Secretary of Defense. He then said, well, what can we do? And the best technology that was available back then, and this is over 10 years ago, was something called an intrusion detection system. It was a box, essentially, that you put on your network. And it sent out a little alarm email anytime it thought somebody was trying to get into the network in an unorthodox way. And so we said, we think you should buy these things and put them on the networks. And about 6 months later, we came back and we met with the head of the Army and the head of the Air Force and the head of the Navy to see how their systems were doing. And one of these guys, I think it was the head of the Army, said, well, it's terrible. You know, you've made us put these intrusion detection systems on our network. Before we had them on our network, nobody ever attacked us. Now that you have put these boxes on our network, they're going off all the time and people are attacking us all the time.
So he was assuming that they were being left alone when what was actually happening was they were being attacked silently.
Ignorance is bliss.
Uh-huh. Well, the fact that NSA, National Security Agency hackers, were able to get into these sensitive Pentagon computer networks, did that indicate that other hackers might already have been in them and doing some mischief?
It did, because the NSA hackers did not have any insider knowledge, and they weren't using any classified tricks. One of the rules for that exercise 10 years ago was we could only use techniques that we found available on the internet itself. So techniques that hackers were already talking about to each other in chat rooms. In other words, very low-level, publicly available attack tools. And what's happened in the 10 years since is enormous in terms of two things. One, our dependence on computer networks. And two, the ability of hackers, including terrorist groups and governments, to get in to networks. What hasn't changed is how bad our defenses are.
Now, you know, I think you mentioned in the book that even computer networks operated by the Joint Chiefs of Staff appear to have been penetrated by hackers. Is there any evidence that they caused damage?
Well, a lot of this is still classified, and the Pentagon is reluctant to say what's happened to them. They don't want people to know. But one thing became clear last year when the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, had to admit that his own front office, his own office computer system, was not only compromised, but compromised by an attack from the government of China. And it was about the same time that the Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, was also hacked by the government of China. At the end of 2007, the British Domestic Security Service, MI5, sent out a classified note to 300 companies, the 300 largest companies in the United Kingdom, private companies. And the classified note said, "You should assume that the Chinese government has hacked its way into your networks and knows everything on them."
Now, what were the Chinese doing in the Secretary of Defense's computers? Do we know? And were they confronted about this?
Well, they of course, deny it. And it's easy to deny these things because people can trace back attacks only so far. And it's always possible that the attacks originated somewhere else. Let me give you an example. When I was in the White House, I came into work one day and they told me, oh, China, this was back in about the year 2000, China tried to attack our White House internet site last night. And before I accepted that, I said, well, what do you mean China? The government of China? Who in the government of China? Tell me more. Show me the trace back. And when they did the trace back completely, they found out that, yes, the attack had come through the Chinese telephone switch, China Telecoms, but the attack had originated in Washington State. So I mean, you always have to be careful about saying you know who did it if you haven't traced it all the way back. And people can assume names on the internet. They can assume anonymity. They can spoof addresses. But I think it's pretty clear that in the attacks in 2007 that we were talking about, it was the Chinese government. Now, were they doing it as a training exercise for their cyber attack force, which they have? They have a cyber attack force in the military. Were they doing it just to send us a signal? The signal could be, remember that if you mess with us in any significant way, we will always be able to get back at you. Was it somebody else altogether? I don't know. I think it was the Chinese government.
Our guest is Richard Clark. He was the former National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism in the White House in the Clinton and Bush administrations. His latest book is called Your Government Failed You. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, we're speaking with the former National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism in the White House for the Clinton and Bush administrations, Richard Clark. His latest book, which deals with weaknesses in the nation's national security efforts, is called Your Government Failed You. Well, Richard Clark, when President Clinton asked you to look into the cyber terror, which I know is a term that you don't prefer, but the vulnerabilities of computer networks, one of the things that you did was to contact the CEOs of a lot of the large computer software and hardware companies. What did you find about their level of awareness of the issue and their awareness of vulnerabilities in their own hardware and systems?
Well, what I found was that the manufacturers of software and hardware, even the giant companies worth hundreds of billions of dollars, they only do one little thing that's necessary for cyberspace to work. So Microsoft makes software, most of it for games, some of it for offices, and they make operating systems for laptops and desktops. That's a very small piece of all of the things that are necessary for cyberspace to work. And that's all that they really know. Another giant in the industry is Cisco. And while most consumers don't know about Cisco, Cisco's a huge internet company that makes basically one thing, and that is routers, which are the switches that move the little electrons and make the internet work. And you can find this all the way across the industry. There are all of these small little niches that companies perform. None of them are fully aware of all of the components necessary to make cyberspace work. And so there's no overall accountability, there's no overall responsibility, and there's no one designing the entire system to be secure. And so when you go to talk to a CEO of a big software company or a CEO of a big router manufacturing company, you'll be lucky if they really understand their own company, let alone the problems of cyberspace and how all of these things interact. The software is really usually the problem. Software is code written by human beings. And all of the studies that we have done indicate that human beings who write code, even those bright MIT geeks, make a lot of mistakes. And why is that a problem? Because if you can find those mistakes, some of them, some of the encoding mistakes in software, then you can get the software to do things that it's not supposed to do, like let you into a network that's supposedly secret.
Speaking of China's efforts at cyber penetration, you have to tell the story about the digital picture frames.
Well, this, I think, is the tip of the iceberg. But it occurred earlier this year that you could go to a large chain store in the United States, I believe it was Best Buy, and buy one of these nice Christmas presents, which is a picture frame, a physical picture frame, but you can download from your computer into the picture frame lots of pictures, 100 pictures or more. And then you can fix it so that every 5 seconds or 10 seconds or 30 seconds, the picture that appears in the picture frame on your desk changes. That's very nice. Now, the problem was it was made in China, as so many pieces of technology are these days. And when you took it and plugged it into your computer so that you could download pictures from your computer to the picture frame, meanwhile, the picture frame was doing something on its own. It was uploading into your computer a little stealth tool that ran around your computer looking for passwords, looking for credit card numbers, looking for any little piece of information that had any value, and then took over your email program without your being able to detect it and emailed all of that information back to a site in China.
I'm getting now, chills here.
if they're doing that with consumer picture frames, imagine what else they're doing.
Well, now, all right, so what happens here? Whether it's the government of China or not, they've gotten into my computer, they've taken all of my passwords and my pathetically boring email. What do they do with it? What do they want with it?
Well, your computer, my computer, everyone's computer, may be what's called in the hacker trade a zombie. And that sounds very frightening. But here's what a zombie is. Somehow they get into your computer and they set up an operation inside your computer that is not visible on your screen. You'll never know that there's something happening. Your computer may slow down a little bit. You don't know why. You may not notice it at all. But in the background, their little program is doing whatever it is that they want it to do. When you get 100,000 computers that are compromised like that, you know, grandma's computer and school computers and all sorts of library computers that aren't well secured, you get 100,000 of them relatively quickly. Now you've got all of that computing power at your command. You can take 100,000 computers on the network and direct their signals all at once to one switch, overloading that switch and knocking things off the internet. That's called a distributed denial of service attack. So sometimes when they're taking over computers, it's not to get your password, certainly not to read your email, or maybe not even to get your credit card number. Maybe it's the hackers just want to add another zombie so that they have this massive number of computers under their control to do whatever they want.
Well, in the case of these picture frames manufactured in China that were discovered to have this stealth software designed to get into your home computer, What was discovered about the perpetrator of that attack, and what were the consequences?
Well, nothing was ever discovered about who did it. The only thing that could be discovered was where the material that was stolen from your computer was sent. And it was sent to a site in China, and China, of course, is investigating the case.
We're speaking with Richard Clark. He was the National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism in the White House during the Clinton and Bush administrations. His latest book is Your Government Failed You. When you were in the White House working on cybersecurity issues, you assembled a conference including information technology executives and experts, but also a guy called Mudge, M-U-D-G-E. Explain who he was and what his role was.
Well, he is now a well-respected ethical hacker, a white hat hacker, working for a company in Boston. But at the time, when he was a lot younger, he had a regular boring day job. And he and a bunch of friends who were very computer literate, who all had boring day jobs, rented a place called The Loft outside of Boston and went around looking in dumpsters at electronics companies and taking computers that people were throwing away and playing with them and getting them to work and getting them to work better than they were ever intended to work. And soon these dozen guys had a massive computer capability, and they began investigating on their own just for fun to see what the mistakes were, what the vulnerabilities were in the Internet. And the FBI used them off the record informally when the FBI had questions related to the Internet.
So what these hackers do that are, as you say, white hat hackers, is they discover vulnerabilities in software and hardware, and then they communicate that, to the manufacturers, right, and the government. And then if it's not fixed, what do?
They give the manufacturers a certain amount of time, depending upon what the mistake is that they discover and what vulnerabilities it opens up. But after a while, if the manufacturer doesn't do anything about it, they will tell the world about the mistake, the vulnerability, by posting it in one of these chat rooms on the Internet. And that creates problems because then bad guy hackers will immediately learn about the vulnerability, and they will then write what's called an exploit, a program to use this mistake that the hackers have discovered to attack computer programs.
We're speaking with Richard Clark. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, our guest is Richard Clark. He was the former National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism in the Bush and Clinton White Houses. He's written a novel called Breakpoint, and his latest book about weaknesses in the nation's national security efforts is called Your Government Failed You. I wanted to talk about some of the specific threats that may be out there, and part of this comes from the novel that you wrote, Breakpoint. It begins with a scene in which there is a series of explosions aimed at points on the shorelines of the United States at which fiber optic cables leave the ocean and enter, land sites where there are these, in effect, unsecured buildings that are vulnerable to attack. Is this the way it is in real life?
Yeah, unfortunately it is. When I first started worrying about Internet security for the White House, I said to my team, I want to go see the Internet. And they all had a good chuckle and said, you know, you're silly guy. You can't see the Internet. It's a virtual thing. It's in cyberspace. I said, no, wait a minute. It's got to have some manifestations in the real world that we can go out and touch and kick the tires. And it does. So the Internet runs up your street, underneath the street in a fiber optic cable. It goes into buildings all around your community where there are switches. There are physical manifestations of it, and you can attack those physical manifestations. When you write an email to somebody in London, it doesn't most of the time bounce off a satellite. It runs down the street, and then it runs out to the Jersey Shore and through a little building on the beach, and then under the water in a cable, not unlike the telegraph cables from 150 years ago, except these are fiber optic cables. They have a lot more capability. But if you cut those physical manifestations of the internet, as 9/11 did in New York, by the way. Lower Manhattan was cut off from cyberspace, and the stock market, the trading floors couldn't trade. And one of the reasons it took so long to reopen the stock market after the 9/11 attack was that the stock market couldn't communicate with anybody.
And I know there was an incident recently, and I forget exactly where it's believed a ship anchor in the Middle East somewhere had gone astray and damaged a cable. Is there a movement to provide more security to these?
No, there isn't. The theory is that there's so much fiber optic capability around that there's redundancy, and therefore if you lose something here or there, you can reroute around it. Well, that's true. And then you have choke points where it all comes together, where at the end of the day, all of those fiber lines have to go to the New York stock market somewhere or other facilities like that. And so it is possible to do damage to cyberspace through physical attacks. Again, the point here is we are so dependent upon cyberspace that if somebody knocks it out, intentionally or otherwise, whether that person is a government or a criminal or somebody having fun, if they knock out certain kinds of cyberspace, we lose control of our military, we lose control of our banks, we lose control of our airlines, our air traffic control system. We are very, very vulnerable to someone doing damage in cyberspace.
There was a headline last October from a publication called The Register, which said Richard Clark, former security czar, calls for closed internet. Now, what are they getting wrong about what you're proposing?
They're not getting anything wrong. I believe there are certain functions that shouldn't be done on what we call the public internet. You know, should the Pentagon's command and control system be on the public internet? Well, it's not. We've moved it into a private network, where actually the fiber and the routers and everything else is, we think, separate from the other internet. Well, there are lots of other things that perhaps should be on private systems, like the command and control for the electric power grid, like perhaps medical records and hospital control systems, the air traffic control system. Why should the digits running the air traffic control system be running down the same fiber that your Amazon book order is running, or your email to your mother? It shouldn't be on the same internet. They should be totally physically separated.
So this would be, in effect, a completely different secure set of hardware, which you don't have any anonymous traffic on.
A set both of hardware, of switches, of routers, and of the fiber optic connecting them, so that there is no physical connection between the internet and these control systems. Now, that exists today for the Pentagon, for some intelligence agencies, for some very large companies. But I think the kind of sensitive functions that we're talking about, banking, the stock market, the electric power grid, other things like that, just shouldn't have anything to do with an internet that anybody anywhere in the world can get into.
Now, there have been plans developed by the federal government to increase cybersecurity. There was a national strategy to secure cyberspace signed by the president in 2003. And then I think another initiative authorized earlier this year. Give me your sense of those efforts and how effective they've been.
Well, the strategy was developed painstakingly with a lot of public input from universities and from corporations and from experts around the country. And it was given to President Bush in February of 2003, and he thanked everybody for the effort and I think promptly threw it in the trash barrel. Nothing happened until 2007 when they began to be aware that the Chinese government was hacking into sensitive sites in the Defense Department and in defense industries. And then in January of this year, the president signed off on a new initiative backed up by many, many billions of dollars to try initially to protect government computer networks and to do research on new ways of protecting cyberspace.
And it sounds like what you're saying now is a large and expensive effort to just develop, in effect, a separate and secure system for these critical functions.
Well, that's what I'm proposing, and I think the government is looking at that for some functions, but no one's actually doing it for things like the electric power grid.
Well, Richard Clark, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Richard Clark speaking with Fresh Air contributor Dave Davies. Clark is a former White House National Coordinator for Security and Counterterrorism. His new book is called Your Government Failed You, Breaking the Cycle of National Security Disasters. Dave Davies is a senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News.